You're listening to The Oddscast, the original UFC betting podcast that's straight to the point. Hosted by leading MMA oddsmaker Nick Kalikas and MMA journalist Brian Heminger, they provide you the absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting. MMAoddsbreaker.com. Don't place your wagers without us.
Welcome to the Oddscast, presented by BetDSI. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC on ESPN Plus 6 event, which takes place in Nashville, Tennessee. If you're unfamiliar with our format, Nick and I will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, Kyle Marley lost one unit on his free bet for UFC on ESPN plus 5 on John Phillips at plus 150 odds. Kyle has his bets and fantasy MMA picks available now on MMAoddsbreaker.com. Back to the present, UFC on ESPN plus 6 features a 12-fight card in total and will be aired exclusively on ESPN plus this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking things off in the opening bout of the evening, we have Eric Shelton, who is 13-5 with one no contest, taking on Jordan Espinoza, who is 12-5. And this is in the flyweight division. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Shelton open minus 150, the comeback on Espinoza plus 110. And looking over at our sponsored sportsbook, betdsi.eu, make sure you guys give BetDSI some love. Right now over at DSI, we're seeing Shelton coming in at minus 155, the comeback plus 125 in Espinoza. So line margins have tightened up a little bit, and there is two-way action coming into this fight. It's kind of going back and forth a little bit. And this is going to be a heck of a fight, man. I'll tell you what, for Espinoza coming in, making his official UFC debut here against Shelton, man, they've not done any favors for Shelton. Eric Shelton has fought nothing but very good fighters throughout his career. Luckily for him, he got back on track with a quality win over Morales in his last fight. Another competitive fight for him, but still, I mean, Shelton is the type of fighter that I love watching compete, man. The guy's so well-rounded. He's got some speed. He's got some power. He's fun to watch on the feet. He's got some good grappling exchanges. I mean, just an awesome fighter. So well-rounded and just at the top of his game, really. And again, he's had some setbacks. I mean, he's got a losing overall resume in the UFC thus far, and he's that talented of a fighter. But as I said at the beginning, their UFC's not giving him any favors here with Espinoza coming in, making his UFC debut. Espinoza is another one of these guys that's a very well-rounded fighter, a dangerous fighter. In fact, out of the two, Espinoza is the one that's more of a finisher. I mean, this guy had very solid experience outside of the UFC. In fact, he's got a win on Dana White's Contender Series. That was an impressive finish. But before that, he was on CES events as well, Access TV type of fights, and it's got some quality wins, man. I mean, he's faced some good competition, and he's a type of fighter that through the years has progressed. He's gotten better fight by fight. He's really come into his own lately as well. So he's a savvy vet. So he's ready to come in here and take on Shelton. And I'm expecting a fun scrap. It should be back and forth. I really think how this fight's going to play out. If he hits a scorecard, Shelton's going to probably win another competitive close decision. But the advantage definitely lies in Shelton overall. I think I'd be surprised if he doesn't get the decision here. Now, Espinoza's best path to victory, I think, is actually maybe possibly locking in a choke or a finish over Shelton, knocking him out, stunning him, and then possibly jumping on a sub. Not an easy task to do because Shelton's such a game fighter, but if anybody could do it, I think Shelton, he's faced some good competition, as I said, but Espinoza's probably one of the more dangerous opponents that he has faced. So if anybody can do it, it might be a guy like Espinoza. So this is tricky in regards to that type of fight, but I'm going to lean a little bit more towards Shelton myself because, like I said, I think if Espinoza cannot finish the job, I don't see Espinoza really winning on the cards, even if it will be a close decision. So my head says Shelton edges this one out. Another awesome fight to start off the card.
Espinoza definitely has some talent. You know, he's coming in the UFC and has some really strong finishing ability, but the problem is Eric Shelton is very difficult to finish, and I just don't see Espinoza being able to put him away. And when that happens, I see Eric Shelton being, you know, that savvy UFC vet that has a strong pace in his fights, that gets the job done on the feet, that has pretty good wrestling to back everything up, and you know, Espinoza may be looking to get the fight to the floor. Maybe he's looking for the knockout. And I'm just not convinced that he's going to be able to either land that kill shot or get that big takedown and utilize that ground game as much as he's hoping to do. You know, Eric Shelton is a strong athlete. You know, he may not be, a great finisher in the UFC in the flyweight division, but you know, he's been in there against some really sturdy competition. He's kind of like a gatekeeper in the flyweight division. And so this will be an interesting test to see what Espinoza is made of. But, my main concern here is I just don't think Espinoza has faced even close to the competition level that Shelton has faced. And I think, you know, Shelton's been put through the ringer in his UFC run so far, and he's still here. He's still going strong. He's actually, you know, building up a little bit of momentum now. And, I think, Shelton will, survive whatever Espinoza throws at him and come out on relatively unscathed. And I think Shelton will sway the judges here. I think, superior striking, athleticism, I think he gets the job done. I think Shelton wins a decision. So Eric Shelton's going to be my pick. Now, moving up to the bantamweight division, we have Ryan McDonald, who is 10-0, taking on Chris Gutierrez, who is 12-3-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
McDonald open -165, the comeback in Gutierrez at +105. Right now, what you're seeing over at BetDSI is actually Gutierrez -240, the comeback +195 on McDonald. So the line flipped and a lot of action coming in Gutierrez's way simply because it was a wrong line, a wrong favorite opened. And those of you guys that hopped on that plus money earlier on Gutierrez, hats off to you again because you guys got a bargain. And Gutierrez should be the rightful favorite in this fight. Now, no disrespect to the debuting McDonald. I think he's a very talented fighter at age 26. Man, the guy's already has pretty solid experience before his UFC debut, of course. He's faced some okay competition. I mean, not all studs or anything like that, but still. I mean, the guy from his amateur career to his pro career, you could definitely see the turnaround, and he's got some momentum going right now. The guy's a very technical fighter. He's got some length. He's got some good skill on the feet. Not bad at all, man. He pushes a high pace. He's got some good conditioning. He has some wrestling to go along with a really good ground game. So there's a lot to like about McDonald. I just think that he's taking a big step up in competition here. I said he has some solid experience pre-UFC, but he's never faced a fighter like he's going to face in Gutierrez here. That said, Gutierrez is coming off a disappointing loss for him in his UFC debut. I mean, there's a lot to like about Gutierrez. He's faced some very solid competition. The guy's a tremendous fighter overall. I think he's got excellent striking, pretty solid takedown defense overall. Ground awareness is very good. Everything that you want to see in a fighter. He's got that finishing ability on the feet as well. Gutierrez is a very fun fighter to watch, and I think he definitely has an edge over McDonald as far as quality opponents thus far and the way these guys match up. I think McDonald's going to have difficulties taking Gutierrez to the ground here, and I think Gutierrez is the better striker on the feet, and I think he's got better striking defense as well. If anything that I've seen with McDonald is he does tend to have a little bit of tall man defense at times. He opens up a little bit too much, and he's definitely hittable. So I think the longer this fight plays out, the more Gutierrez touches him up and probably finishes the job along the way. If not, he probably wins on the scorecards, at least a 29-28 type of decision win. So again, I'm not trying to throw McDonald under the bus. I think the guy has some talent and a lot of potential. I just think he's biting off a little bit more than he could chew, making his UFC debut here against a very game Gutierrez, who's going to come into this fight obviously looking even more hungry because he is coming off of that disappointing debut loss. So I think this matches up well for Gutierrez, and it's hard not to pick him to win this fight. Even where the line is right now, I wouldn't blame people for throwing him in a parlay. I mean, I still think there's probably a little bit of value left on Gutierrez. That tells you what kind of opener that really was. So again, Gutierrez should be the side here.
And I'm right with you. McDonald is talented. I think he does have a slight edge on the ground in the fight, and he is a, you know, he's definitely a capable fighter, but Gutierrez is coming in with some serious experience at the LFA level, and then obviously he's been in the UFC for one fight, but didn't quite go his way. But I really think that Gutierrez has the ability on the feet, and Gutierrez is good enough on the ground defensively to avoid McDonald there. And the other thing you really got to factor in is McDonald is stepping up on 2 weeks' notice here. So first off, he's inexperienced against, you know, strong competition. And not saying Gutierrez is a world beater, but I really do feel like Gutierrez is a lot better than we've seen so far in the UFC. And, the other thing is he just hasn't been in there, against top guys. And McDonald has had, you know, even though he's undefeated, he's had some struggles in those wins. And I think that his striking defense has a lot of work or needs a lot of work. And if he gets stuck in stand-up exchanges against Gutierrez, I don't see that going well for him. So I think McDonald needs to get this fight to the floor. And if he doesn't, I think he's going to be a little bit of a fish out of the water, against, Gutierrez, who's going to be about 3 inches taller than him. I think Gutierrez is going to land some shots. I think Gutierrez is going to hurt McDonald, and I think, Gutierrez probably puts him out and, wins by knockout in the first or second round. Now, dropping down to the strawweight division, we have Randa Markos, who is 8-6-1, taking on Angela Hill, who is 8-5. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Angela Hill opened -130 to come back on Markos at -110. Right now, you're seeing over at BetDSI -150 on Hill to come back on Markos +120. So line margins have tightened up a little bit. Two action coming in this fight. A little bit more going Hill's way. So not a bad opener here. It's within ballpark. And I think it's kind of a tricky fight. I'll tell you what, both of these ladies are always involved in close competitive decisions. So if this fight goes to the scorecards again, that's exactly what we're going to see, another close competitive decision. I think the edge on the cards, though, in this fight will probably go to Hill. I just think that she is the better striker overall. I think that Markos obviously has a better ground game. She's capable in her striking as well. Both of these ladies, honestly, they need to get a win here. I think that obviously – both having a recent loss to Ansaroff, and then with the majority decision that Markos ended up getting her last fight, which was a damn good fight. I tell you what, Markos is a warrior. Every one of her fights is pretty fun to watch, at least as well. So much respect to her in that regard. But she's in some close competitive fights. She needs to get a win here. I mean, usually Markos is the type of fighter that has a win, loss, and that's one of the problems with her. She's inconsistent. I mean, one time she'll come in looking like a title contender. The next fight, in my opinion, she looks like she's a gatekeeper or barely on the roster. So she needs to get a little bit more consistency. Hill, on the other hand, I think has been a little bit more consistent. It's just that, you know, sometimes her matchups, the type of fighters that she's faced, because obviously she's a striking-based fighter that has a problem on the ground, but her ground skill is getting to the point where it's gotten a lot better. Her takedown defense is better, and her ground awareness is better. So she's improving in that aspect. But at times, even, you know, the aggressive striking of a ground fighter can throw her off a little bit, and she's kind of being a little bit too defensive in that regard. But in this spot here, I think she's going to be able to sprawl brawl well against Markos, pick her apart a little bit, and probably edge out a decision. So this is a difficult fight. Again, not an easy one to pick. It's hard to bet this fight as well, because again, if it does go to the scorecards and the state of MMA judging, as we say all the time, who knows? I mean, who knows what they're looking for and what they score sometimes. I mean, there's some awful decisions, and that will never change. So any close fight is a wild card, and I think this is going to be a close fight. So with that said, I like Hill a little bit more here. I think she's got a little bit more momentum and improvement going her way. So I'm going to slightly lean with her, but it's not a confident pick because Markos is always game.
And I understand where you're coming from, especially with how inconsistent Randa Markos has been throughout her career in the UFC. I mean, she's a fighter that has the wrestling ability to go out there and beat a Tisha Torres or a Felice Herrig, and then she goes out and doesn't use the wrestling at all and loses to people like, you know, Alexa Grasso, somebody that she could definitely have taken down, you would think. You know, and she's alternated wins and losses her entire UFC career, all the way up until her last fight, when she took on a Marina Rodriguez, a really dangerous striker, and ended up going to a draw. That fight was really interesting. You know, Rodriguez is dangerous. Markos did, you know, have her moments in that fight, but again, she is just... fight IQ, I feel like, is a thing with Markos, because you know that she can use the wrestling, and sometimes she just doesn't do it. And against Angela Hill, I really think she's going to need to use it because even though Marcos has made some improvements on the feet and she's held her own against some decent strikers, you know, an extended striking battle against Angela Hill is not a smart decision. You know, Angela Hill, you know, earned her way back to the UFC after a rough first run. And then, she did it by taking people out with her striking and improving in the stand up. And, you know, she's had her up and down moments in the UFC since, but, you know, she's sticking around because she has competitive, entertaining stand up fights. And, if Randa Marcos gets into one of those, I just don't think she wins it. But the good news is she doesn't have to. She can use the wrestling. And if she uses the wrestling, I think that that is definitely her best, by far the best path to victory. I mean, it's her clear cut path to victory. So Randa, if you're listening, use your wrestling. So I'm going to pick Randa Marcos. I think she does get back on the winning track by using her wrestling, which is what foiled, Angela Hill in Hill's, initial UFC run. You know, she got taken down by Tisha Torres and then, Rose Namajunas utilized the ground game against her and choked her out. So if, Marcos takes her down, I think she wins. If she doesn't, I think she loses. So, my pick is going to be Randa Marcos, but again, fight IQ, I'm definitely concerned about that. Now, moving up to the women's flyweight division, we have Alexis Davis, who is 19-8, taking on Jennifer Maia, who is 15-5-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmakers perspective on this one?
Alexis Davis open -230, the comeback on Jennifer Maia +170. Right now over at BetDSI, we are seeing Davis at -140, the comeback on Maia +110. So needless to say, Maia got that down pretty decent. I understand it. Again, there's some value at the opening line for sure on the underdog. That's why you're seeing it settle where it is now. Not necessarily saying that Maya's going to win the fight, though. This is another close one for me because I see two fighters trending in different directions. I think Davis, even though she hasn't looked awful in her recent UFC run, I think that still she's kind of a declining fighter. She has a lot of experience, you know, obviously fighting really high-level competition and quality wins throughout her career. But I think she's starting to decline where I just don't see the sharpness in her game quite as bit. And I think she gets marked up a little bit easier now. Her face swelling, her striking defense, all that stuff kind of bothers me a little bit. And that's what Maia has to exploit. She has to try to keep this fight upright, and she has to try to land the harder punches and try to mark Davis up along the way, because that swelling and that ability that Maia has to land the punishment at times will probably be the key to this fight. If she can stay off her back and, like I said, land the harder punches and probably outpoint Davis along the way, that's her path to victory. Outside of that, though, Davis has a clear path as well. And it is getting this fight to the floor and kind of working on her ground game, maybe possibly submitting Maia. I mean, if anything, Maya's still weak on the ground compared to the rest of her aspects in her game. So I think that that's an area she's improved greatly on. Her takedown defense has improved. So she's going to be more prepared than she ever has been in this spot. Now, she's coming off of a loss, obviously, to Carmouche. And again, the ground was an issue there. Carmouche is not a finisher as quite like Davis is. So that's going to be the interesting factor. If Davis does get positioned on the ground over Maia, I think she is capable of winning this fight on the ground. So I think that's the deciding factor for me. I'm not that confident because I think Davis is taking kind of a step down and Maia continues to improve her game. So I think this is going to be probably far more competitive than all of us realize. But I still think that I have to side with Alexis Davis. She's going to be the more dangerous fighter in this spot. I think she can win on the scorecards in a close decision, even though I think if it does hit the cards, I wouldn't be surprised if Maia wins it. But I also think that Davis can probably finish Maia, whereas Maia, even though she's going to do some damage against Davis, unless the referee stops it because her face is marked up, her eyes swollen shut or something like that, I think Davis is a warrior. She's tough as nails. It's going to be very hard for Maia to stop Davis. So Davis has more paths to victory here, so I got to side with her. But again, not confident. And where the line is kind of trending now, I mean, eventually, if it does keep dropping to exactly a pick 'em or Davis becomes an underdog, then obviously there's going to be some value on Alexis Davis here in this spot as well. So kind of check out where the line is. And depending on which way it continues to go, if it continues to go Maya's way, like I said, maybe there's some value that opens up on Davis. But for me, slight lean towards Davis, and that's my pick.
If you're just looking at MMA math, then, you know, Alexis Davis seems like the guarantee. I mean, Aya had a tough UFC debut against Liz Carmouche, got taken down repeatedly, ended up losing a decision. And Alexis Davis has beat Carmouche twice now. So Davis is decent on the feet, but spectacular on the ground. And Aya is strong on the feet, and, you know, the ground is definitely a weakness. My main issue with Aya is I don't think defensively her ground game is really that good, and obviously on the feet, while she's strong offensively, she has her issues with striking defense, and I think that she can be a bit of a slow starter as well, and I think Alexis Davis could potentially punish her there. You know, if Davis can get a takedown, I think Aya could potentially not just lose a decision. I think that Davis could finish the fight. I know this is a long time ago, but, you know, Alexis Davis beat, you know, Amanda Nunes back in the day. So, she is a more than capable, fighter, and, you know, she's dangerous. She has a strong ground game. She can, pull out, you know, all kinds of arm bars and chokes and you name it. You know, even from bad positions. Granted, I don't think she wants to be in bad positions, especially against Aya, somebody that she wants to be, to put on the defensive. If she can do that against Aya, I think she's going to be in tremendous shape. I mean, if she gets stuck in a stand-up fight for three rounds, then I'm going to be concerned. But if, Davis can, you know, push this into the fence, get this to the floor, maybe, you know, push a strong offensive striking pace early and then get Aya thinking striking and then take it to the floor, then that's exactly where Davis is going to thrive. But if Aya settles in and then is able to keep the fight upright, then I think Aya has a chance to win. But otherwise, I'm going to go Davis. I think the ground game is going to be a huge factor here, and I think Davis does get it there, and I think that she actually does pull it off and get the submission victory. So Alexis Davis is my pick. Now moving up to the bantamweight division, we have Marlon Vera, who is 14-5-1, taking on Frankie Sanes, who is 12-5. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Vera opened -245, the comeback on Sanes at +185, and right now looking over at BetDSI, we are seeing Vera at -160, the comeback +130 the other way on Sanes. So line margins have tightened up. And again, action coming in on the underdog because that line was set way high, especially stylistically how these guys match up. I mean, there's no question what each has to do here. I mean, honestly, Sanes is probably underrated in all aspects of the game, but I think the best path to victory for him, again, is getting takedowns and not wrestling in his spot. Vera has had problems with takedown defense in the past. Now, he does have a very good ground game. He does throw up submissions, and you got to be careful with him because he's capable of finishing fights that way. But I think Sanes, overall, his submission defense is pretty solid, and if he does get some takedowns, he can probably stay out of submission trouble and just grind out Vera along the way. Now, on the feet, I think it'll be relatively close as well at times because I think Sanes' boxing is pretty good. It's not bad. He does have a little bit of power in his hands as well. But overall, I think the more dangerous fighter on the feet and obviously with a little bit more length is Vera. So I think Sanes has to realize, again, his clear path to victory is probably grinding this out like he has done before in the past as well. He is 38 years old, though. I should point that out right now. There's a big youth advantage on Vera's side. So that does concern me because at age 38, I mean, the fall off can come at any time. And I thought Sainz is actually on his way before that. But credit to him, before this fight, I should say. But credit to him, he did bounce back, got a couple impressive wins, and kept his roster spot in the UFC. And he showed some life, man. So Sainz definitely is a very talented fighter, and he's capable of winning this fight against Vera. So this is intriguing because I think this is one of those fights, and there's a few of these on the card where if this hits the scorecards, I think Sanes wins, and I'm pretty confident in it, honestly. I think it will be competitive, but I think Sanes clearly has the edge on the scorecards. But if this fight ends inside the distance, then there's a clear edge to Vera. And again, Vera is the better finisher in this spot. I think he is the younger, more hungry fighter in this spot as well. So he is going to be a dangerous person to fight. And I know the UFC likes Vera as well. I mean, as far as the fans getting behind him and and he's a warrior type of fighter that, you know, they can kind of promote in Mexico and whatnot as well. So there's a lot to like about Vera here in this spot. Especially again, the youth advantage that he has over Sane. So I think there's a lot going for him, but I still think it's a very difficult stylistic matchup. And I have to lean Sane's way because I think if he doesn't get finished, he probably wins this fight. So I hope I'm right and he doesn't get finished. And he gets the W here because I'm going to pick Sainz to get the win over Vera.
Vera is a finisher. He has some knockout ability on the feet. He's long. He has good kicks, strong punching ability. He's improving in the stand-up. Definitely getting better every time we see him in that department. And his ground game has always been really dangerous. You know, with those long limbs, he can catch people in triangle chokes, arm bars, you name it. So basically, if a finish comes in this fight, I would say 90-95% of the time it's coming from Marlon Vera, especially with somebody that is, you know, kind of getting up there in years in Frankie Sainz. And, but Frankie Sainz is a really strong wrestler with that tough as nails attitude, and he's not somebody that can just be finished easily. So, I would not be shocked one bit if over the course of three rounds, Frankie Sainz gets like six or seven takedowns and repeatedly dumps Marlon Vera on his back and forces Vera to fight off of his back foot, flusters Vera. And, as long as he avoids, you know, diving into a triangle choke or a guillotine or something, I think Frankie Sainz is going to be able to survive submission attempts. And get the job done with, top control, ground and pound, you name it. You know, that's kind of the Frankie Sainz path to victory every time he's out there. You know, he's had his moments with, you know, some striking exchanges throughout his, UFC career, but I think this is definitely a situation where he doesn't want to screw around on the feet for too long because, he's given up about 5 inches in reach to Marlon Vera. Vera's a couple inches taller. You know, he's asking for it if he screws around on the feet for too long. And, I think, this is just going to boil down to can Sainz keep taking Vera down without getting caught? And I think he does. You know, Vera is dangerous, but, Sainz has been in there, I think, against better ground fighters than Vera. And, Sainz has survived. And I think Sainz gets the job done. I think he rides this out and wins a decision along the way. So Frankie Sainz is going to be my pick. Now, moving on to the preliminary card headliner in the featherweight division, we have Bobby Moffitt, who is 14-3, taking on Bryce Mitchell, who is 10-0. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Moffitt open minus 185, the comeback on Mitchell at plus 145. And right now what you're seeing over at BetDSI is minus 150 for Moffitt. The comeback on Mitchell is around plus 120. So again, another spot line margins have tightened up a little bit. More action coming in Mitchell's way, but there is two-way action coming into this fight as well because there has been some action, decent action actually, the other way on Moffitt as well. So there is a lot of two-way opinion on this fight, and there will continue to be so. And this is one of the most intriguing fights on the card for me because I think you have two legit younger prospects at 145 pounds that are going to do battle here that both have a bright future ahead of them, honestly. So this is an intriguing matchup. Both actually like to battle on the ground, have good scramblers, and they, you know, love to kind of outwork their opponents in that regard as well. So starting off with Mitchell, man, I tell you what, I've been nothing but impressed with Mitchell. I mean, he obviously from the Ultimate Fighter, he lost to Katona, the eventual winner, by a very, very close third round submission loss. I mean, he was probably a minute or so away from maybe stealing the scorecards in that fight where Katona ended up reversing position on him and getting the submission win, which was a beautiful submission and back take. You got to give Katona a lot of credit. But part of that was, you know, Mitchell, I think a little bit of fight IQ, a little bit of fading in his fights. And again, in his last fight, actually against Tyler Diamond, we saw a little bit of that as well. Like as far as Mitchell was a little bit more of a front runner, then he got tired a little bit as the fight progressed. And in round three, it got a little bit scary there because Diamond definitely started pouring on a little bit. So that's one concern with Mitchell is, I mean, as far as his conditioning goes, it's a little bit sketchy at times. You can't 100% depend on it, but Mitchell is the type of fighter that's give you, you know, a very, a good performance in regards to not being a quitter, not giving up in that regard as well. Like what I'm saying is he could fight tired and fight through it. So I am confident in that regard with Mitchell. I think he's a warrior. He has that spirit in him, and I think he's going to continue to fight no matter how tired he is. So I like that. But again, that is the little question mark. Is his conditioning a real issue? But we're going to get to see that play out here because Moffitt's definitely going to test that. Moffitt is a grinder. He's a well-rounded fighter in all aspects of the game, but more so than anything else, it's his ground game that he's going to try to probably implement here against Mitchell. Even though Mitchell's pretty smooth underground in his own right, I think Moffitt, that's his best path to victory as well. It's getting some takedowns, trying to outwork Mitchell. And Moffitt is so dangerous with those dart strokes. I mean, you want to be very cautious when you're scrambling on the floor with this guy. I mean, he's got so many wins by submission. I think it's around 4 or 5, if I'm not mistaken, for Moffitt that he's actually finished in that particular choke. So with that said, Mitchell does stick his head into takedowns as well, at times. And, that's an area, again, that should cause a little bit of concern. But I think on the feet, Mitchell is the more dangerous striker of the two. I think he is a little bit more accurate, and I think he can probably deliver a little bit more punishment as the fight goes. I think Mitchell can also probably put Moffitt on his back. He's got some underrated wrestling in that regard. And again, the scrambling ability of Mitchell is pretty fun to watch, but he has to be careful where his neck is. I think he has to be definitely pace himself, or his conditioning has to be up to par a little bit more if he is going to win his fight. So I am going to side that way because I think he is the more intriguing prospect of the two. I think he's going to cause some problems for Moffitt on the feet and even on the ground. I think Mitchell will have success in this fight. So basically this is another one of those spots where I think if Mitchell cannot get caught by that dart stroke of Moffitt, I think he can bust Moffitt up on the feet a little bit. I think he can win on the scorecards as well in this fight. So I think he can win 2 rounds at least. Even if his conditioning does start to slow a little bit, he could probably still manage to pull the cards off. So I do like Mitchell. I think it is a dog or pass situation still at this point as well. Just got to be careful on it because, again, Moffitt is a very dangerous fighter. But in this kind of scenario here, I think it's truly more of a pick 'em type of fight. So if there's plus money on the underdog, there could very well be some value. So you might want to look at Mitchell here. I think he has, again, potential possibly to finish, possibly win on the scorecards as well. And I like what I see from him. I think he's going to continue to get better. So Moffitt's going to be a game fighter. Looking forward to this fight, but my pick is Mitchell.
What I'm really looking forward to in this fight is if it goes to the floor, because both fighters are very talented there. Obviously, Moffitt, very dangerous with those dart chokes, and Mitchell is a very strong ground fighter that can push a high pace for about 2 rounds and then starts to slow down, and that's where things can really get interesting. But basically, I mean, if this fight stays standing, I don't think either guy is really that talented on the feet. I mean, both fighters have absorbed more strikes than they dish out. So maybe Miss Mitchell will get the better of Moffitt on the feet, but, and sometimes this happens is when you have two really strong ground fighters, they decide to have a really crappy kickboxing match. But every part of me is hoping and praying that this fight goes to the floor and we get to see these guys duke it out on the canvas, because I'm really intrigued to see who is the better ground fighter. You know, just based on the statistics of how their UFC debuts went, you know, Moffitt did better in terms of his offensive takedowns and defensively. He was able to stuff about 50% of takedowns, while Mitchell actually only stopped 25%. And Moffitt actually was a lot better, more successful with his offensive wrestling as well. So I think Moffitt might have the better offensive wrestling here. And but Mitchell, I feel, is going to be very dangerous at all moments of the beginnings of this fight. But with Mitchell, it just feels like his conditioning could be an issue. I mean, we've seen him in a couple times now start really strong and then fade late in fights. I mean, it happened against Katona where, you know, he was on his way to winning that fight, and then just right there at the end, Katona was able to reverse a position and then get the win. And then most recently against Tyler Diamond, another, you know, good ground fighter, good wrestler, you know, he ended up having to win by a majority decision by surviving late after fading in the third round. So what really this boils down to is how Mitchell performs in the first 2 rounds, because if he can I mean, if he just goes 1-1 in those first two rounds, I'm really concerned that Moffitt's just going to take the third round based on his conditioning and his pace. And but if Mitchell's able to win the first two rounds, you know, will Moffitt be able to get the finish late? And that's possible as well. So that's kind of where I'm headed is I think Moffitt could get a come-from-behind submission if he's losing because of Mitchell's conditioning. I feel like Moffitt could win a decision if these guys split two rounds and then Moffitt takes over in the third. And I definitely feel like Moffitt potentially could just get the better of him in general. So the only really area that I think Mitchell is better, and I don't think he's that much better just because both guys aren't that good there, is on the feet. And hopefully we don't have to see that for long because, again, like I said, I want an entertaining ground battle. And I think this fight will be up for deserving of the headliner of the preliminary card as long as it goes to the ground. So my pick's going to be Bobby Moffitt. I think he gets the job done. I think conditioning and pace will definitely be key. Now, this takes us to the main card, and we have a women's flyweight contest between Macy Barber, who is 6-0, and J.J. Aldrich, who is 7-2. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Barber minus 265, Aldrich plus 185 was the opener. Right now, what you're seeing over at BetDSI is minus 245 for Barber, the comeback plus 195 on Aldrich. So line margins have tightened up. Pretty solid opener there. And I do think that Barber should be favored here. But make no mistake, she's fighting the toughest fight of her career in Aldrich. I mean, Aldrich, in my opinion, is another one of these fighters that puts it all on the line out there, overperforms in many ways, underrated in many ways. I mean, she just pushes a high pace. She's tough as nails. I mean, getting better in all aspects of the game as well. I really like what I see with Aldrich. She's on a nice little 3-fight win streak over quality competition as well. Confidence at an all-time high. And they're throwing her in there against the hype of the future in Barber. And Barber is, I'll tell you what, she's living up to the hype, man. This girl is definitely a talented fighter. I mean, obviously she's still very young. She's 20 years old. I believe she wants to be the youngest UFC champion in the history of the sport. Moving up to 125 though, that's interesting. I'm not so sure if I'd like that move because obviously Shevchenko's in this weight class. So that's going to be, if Barber keeps on winning fights, I don't know if that's going to be a task she can handle. But that said, we're going to focus on this one here. Baby steps, I guess, first here. So with Barber moving up to 125, Aldrich moving up to 125 as well. Should be a fun fight, and I do like it. Like I said, both these ladies definitely bring it. They come to fight. I think Barber is just the better fighter a little bit overall. I think she is the more capable and better striker. I think she's the better ground fighter overall. I think that's where the biggest discrepancy is going to lie. I think Aldridge is getting better at her takedown defense. Everything's improving as far as her ground game goes, but Barber has the biggest edge, I think, in that aspect of the fight. So I think she mixes it up well enough on the feet to utilize her ground game by getting some takedowns, opportunistic takedowns, and then punishing Aldridge a little bit as the fight progresses. It's going to be a competitive fight. I mean, like I said, Aldridge is going to give Barber everything she can handle and more probably in this fight, but I think Barber's up to the task, and like I said, the hype is legit from what we've seen so far with Barber, so hard to pick against her in this spot. Now, where the line is right now, is there really betting value around 2.5 to 1, especially as I said, this is going to be, I think, the toughest test for Barber in her career, so I would probably stay away from it. If anything, it's a dog or pest situation. I'm not recommending a play on the dog though, because I do think Barber wins, but I probably stay away from it overall, because let's see how this fight plays out with Aldrich being so tough. But I do like Barber, and I think, like I said, she can be a future champion if the right path kind of gets laid out for her. So we'll see how it all works out. But Barber, fun to watch. I'm looking forward to this fight as well. And she's.
Yeah, and I have to side with Barber as well. I mean, she's just so talented and on the rise, just a really promising, well-rounded, all aspects of mixed martial arts. The main thing, though, is if this stays standing, Aldrich definitely has a path to victory. I mean, Aldrich is a strong striker, pushes a nice pace on the feet, and you know, Barber, she's hittable. You know, her defense still has a little bit of work to do, and if she decides to screw around and stand for three rounds and just try to show off her striking ability. And that's definitely a path to victory that's been opened for JJ Aldrich, because you look at Aldrich and in her two losses, I mean, she lost because of the ground game. You know, she earlier in her career in Invicta, she lost to Jamie Moyle, got submitted. And then in her loss to Juliana Lima in her UFC debut, she got taken down repeatedly. And, you know, that's by far the path to victory for Macy Barber. I mean, Macy Barber is extremely well-rounded. She has a strong takedown game. I think she can set up her takedowns a little bit better. You know, she had a little bit of trouble finishing takedowns in her UFC debut, but, you know, she still got the job done. She got the finish against a strong opponent. And I don't know if she'll be able to finish JJ Aldrich, but I do think that she can get Aldrich on her back and keep her there. I'm a little surprised this fight's taking place at flyweight. I mean, both fighters have historically been competing at strawweight. I can understand maybe Barber wanting to move up because, you know, she is so young and maybe she's starting to fill out a little bit more. And, you know, she's a little concerned about having a heavy weight cuts at, you know, such a young age. But with Aldrich, I mean, I don't understand this at all, really. I mean, she was building some momentum in the strawweight division. I mean, maybe she just doesn't want to become a top contender in a division where, you know, her teammate, Rose Namajunas is the champ, and she doesn't want to, you know, have to have any, controversy like, you know, way back in the day when AKA had all the top contenders at welterweight, or, you know, Cormier and Velasquez at heavyweight, like that kind of situation. But I mean, Aldrich was still a ways away. So I don't really understand why she's moving up, but, regardless, you know, these girls are about the same size, but I think Barbara will be the physically stronger fighter. You know, she's getting better every time we'll see her. And while Aldrich is on a nice little run, I just think that Barber's well-roundedness is really going to be a big factor here. I think Barb's going to be stronger in the clinch. Barber's going to be stronger on the ground. And Barber should be able to hold her own on the feet, if not potentially get the better of her on the feet. So I just really like where Barber's headed right now. I think that she is a really promising prospect. I don't know about the decision to move to flyweight in terms of becoming the youngest UFC champ, unless Valentina Shevchenko retires all of a sudden, because I just, as good as Barber is, I don't think that she can kind of close that gap in time. But we'll see what happens. But I do think that Macy Barber, at least in this fight, should have the edge. So she's going to be my pick. I think she could potentially get a finish on the ground, but more often than not, she probably wins a decision here. Now, moving on into the... Now, moving up to the featherweight division, we have Luis Peña, who is 5-1, taking on Steven Peterson, who is 17-7. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Peña open minus 230, the comeback on Peterson plus 170. Right now, looking over at DSI, we are seeing Peña at minus 250, the comeback plus 200 on Peterson. So again, line margins have tightened up a little bit, and there is two-way action coming into this fight as well. Another tough one. I mean, I know there's a lot of, I think, again, support and people finding path to victories for both fighters. I mean, right away we should say that Peña is dropping down 145 pounds for this fight as well. And I've been nothing but impressed with him. I think he was a little bit overhyped, honestly, from the Ultimate Fighter show, but making his official UFC debut and how he performed, even in that loss, I mean, I honestly was pleasantly surprised. And I'm saying because I picked Trezano to beat him, but I was pleasantly surprised with how he performed. I thought Trezano was going to have an easier path to victory against him, put it that way. I was more confident in Trezano there, and I bet Trezano, and I was actually sweating that. So it was a win, but in that loss, what I'm saying is that paying respect definitely went up for me. I mean, the guy is a very talented fighter. There's no doubt. There's been buzz around him for a while. you know, Violent Bob Ross, as they like to call him. And the guy is definitely a violent fighter. He's a finisher, man. The guy is fun to watch everywhere the fight takes place. He's long for the weight class at 145 pounds. He's got some really nice submissions with the chokes. You know, he could Kimura you. He's got some nice setups. He's got some good ground and pound. He's got that killer instinct. There's a lot to like about Pena, but he's facing a very tough fighter in Peterson. I mean, Peterson has been very game. And even before he made his UFC debut, he was the type of fighter that was a warrior on, obviously, on the LFA circuit, the Access TV type of fight shows that we were used to seeing with Legacy and those type of shows. I mean, he's faced a lot of high level competition and again, beat a lot of those guys as well. So Peterson's another very well-rounded fighter. In the UFC, of course, thus far, he's had some tough fights, you know. I mean, coming off a very impressive, hard-fought battle over Bissett, which was good for him. He deserves to have a W in the UFC. I think Peterson should have made the roster a long time, to be honest with you. So, he's a game fighter everywhere the fight takes place, and he's tough as nails. He's one of these guys that I think defensively at times it is a concern with Peterson because he is hittable. He gets marked up at times, and he does get hurt in fights, but he's a warrior. He's got one of those mentalities that he's not going to quit on you. He's got pretty good ground awareness and just tough as nails. He's got a pretty solid chin. Even if he gets rocked, he's the type of fighter that hangs in there and then turns things around. So he won't go away. And unless Pena does find a finish early in this fight, this is going to be a war, a back and forth type of battle. So I understand the people that are backing Peterson in this spot. I get it because I think that, man, he's just so tough to get out, you know, to get rid of. And if not, he's going to be really a thorn, you know, the whole way through. And I think on the scores, it will be competitive. So I can see Peterson taking this fight, but I don't know. I just think that Pena is kind of growing on me a little bit. And I think, like I said, despite his last loss and looking back at some of his performances, the guy does have some skill. And I mean, this is a winnable fight. I think he can probably do some damage along the way. And even if it does hit the scorecard, if it is close, I think Pena could win on the cards here as well. So I'm going to side with Pena. I think that at 145, this probably is a good move for him. Let's see how he looks at weigh-ins and how he performs in this weight class. But I mean, he is going to be a tough out at 145. So the Pena, and it should be another awesome fight.
And I understand the pick, especially after Pena had a really strong performance in his last fight, a fight where, you know, not a lot of people thought that he'd be able to compete against somebody that was that talented. And he made that fight very, very close. And now he's dropping down. So, you know, he's going to have some physical advantages here. I mean, he's got 5 inches in height and 6 inches in reach on Steven Peterson. So, you know, he is going to just be towering over this guy in the featherweight division. You know, 6'3" at 145 pounds is ridiculous. So, Pena, I mean, he doesn't just have the physical advantages because he also is going to be the more powerful striker. I mean, he had power at lightweight, and he also is a finisher on the ground with strong grappling. So if a finish comes in this fight, I definitely feel like it's coming from Luis Pena. But Steven Peterson is a tough dude to finish. That's the thing. Steven Peterson is, you know, tough as nails. He can survive an onslaught of strikes. I mean, we've seen him in just absolute wars. Both on, you know, contender series and throughout his career where, you know, he's fought all over the regional circuit to earn his way to the UFC. So, you know, this guy has, you know, he's paid his dues. Peterson offensively, I mean, he pushes a pace. That's the thing. Pena, he's kind of always looking for that big shot. But Peterson, I mean, he's just looking to, build it up, you know, that, death by a thousand cuts type of thing where, you know, he's going to be, dishing it out. Peterson has, superior striking defense compared to Pena. He's more accurate offensively with his, striking. He, lands more about 3 times as many strikes compared to, Pena. And so far he's been able to avoid being taken down in the UFC. So this is not like a cakewalk fight for Luis Pena. I mean, clearly if Pena gets a finish, or if a finish this fight, it's almost certainly coming from Pena because of the physical advantages, the power, and the submission ability. But if this fight goes to decision with the pace that Peterson pushes, and if Pena is unable to get this to the ground, even though Pena is going to be having that, you know, really strong reach advantage, I just don't see him utilizing the reach that well. You know, that's not really a key strength of his. He's not flashing a jab, you know, working his distance, keeping an opponent at bay. I mean, he's looking to knock people out. And if he doesn't knock Steven Peterson out, then Peterson's going to be landing, you know, two or three shots to every one that Pena throws. So I can definitely see Pena winning or Pena losing rounds in this fight because Peterson is going to be in his face, you know, throwing a leather. You know, Peterson has been around the block. He's competed against some really tough fighters throughout his career. And I think Pena potentially could be in over his head a little bit and could be surprised by what Peterson throws at him. So I don't see Peterson getting a finish or anything, but I can see him outworking Pena and catching him off guard, even though Pena is going to be, you know, much bigger, much more powerful, and the better submission fighter. So if a finish happens, I think it's Pena, but if this goes to the scorecards, and I think that it very well could go to the scorecards because of the toughness of Peterson, then I think Steven Peterson could be pulling off the upset. So I'm going to side with Steven Peterson by decision. Now, dropping back down to the flyweight division, we have Jussier Formiga, who is 22-5, taking on Davison Figueiredo, who is 15-0. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Figueiredo open -175, Formiga +135, and right now over at BetDSI, we're seeing Figueiredo -140, +110 on Formiga. More action coming in the dog's way. So people loving what they've seen from Formiga lately, and you can't blame him. I mean, from really coming to his own. I think he's getting better fight by fight. He's getting more confident. He's working really hard. He's faced high-level competition. And, I mean, look at some of the wins he has on his resume, starting with the last win he has over Pettis. Pettis, if you look closer at his resume, I mean, the success he's had in the UFC has been phenomenal, really. So that is a very quality win, and the way he went about it as well. So, I you know, you got to take your hat off to him. His win over Dustin Ortiz, his win over Ben Wynn not too long ago, his win over Wilson Hayes, Zach Makovsky was a you know, former Bellator champion. I mean, so throughout his career, if you look at Formiga, he's accomplished a lot, and he's beaten a lot of solid opponents. And again, I think his recent three-fight win streak, he's never been better, honestly. So he's at the top of his game right now, and he's that type of fighter. We all know what he is, a pretty decent striker. I'm saying that because he's a grappler, obviously. I mean, his ground game is where it's at. He's just a phenomenal grappler. He's a backpack, as we all like to say, but he's a decent striker these days. You cannot count him out. I mean, it's not like he's just 100% a grappler. You have to respect a little bit of his power, and you know, he brings it. So hats off to you. I love to see these guys that have improved. Guys like Jacare, for example, as well, a well-known world-class grappler that actually is a formidable opponent on the feet these days as well. So guys like that. And Formiga, I think in that category, is a guy that's, you know, maybe not the type of guy that's going to go out there and knock you out or whatever. Like, I know Jacare has some of those on his resume now, but that said, he's improved way above and beyond expectations, in my opinion, on with the striking. But he's in for it here against Figueiredo, man. Figueiredo is one of these guys. I think it's a special talent, and just has been nothing but impressive overall so far to UFC as well. That's why they're matching this fight. I think Figueiredo obviously has some advantages, and one of them lies that he's got some power on the feet, and he could be a nasty type of striker. And Formiga has had some problems, if anything, against heavy hitting guys in the past as well. So I think Figueiredo fits that bill pretty well. He does have a pretty solid ground game in his own right, has some decent takedown defense, has some good grappling. So I think he's going to be at least ready for what Formiga brings to the table here, but can he stop it? Can he keep Formiga off his back and let, you know, can he keep from letting Formiga basically make this a dull, boring fight that, you know, hits the scorecards and he edges him out or something like that? I think he can. I think Figueiredo can do some damage along the way. I think every time that they exchange. I think Formiga is going to be on the worst end of it. And I think, like I said, that power and the ability that Figueredo has to keep the fight upright and kind of scramble out of bad spots at times is going to be the difference maker here. And he's going to land and he's going to be able to do some damage on Formiga. Formiga, not that he's an old man. He has had, like I said, issues in the past with heavy hitters. And I think Figueredo is only getting more confident and only getting better. And I think if he can fight a smart fight here, I mean, his path to victory is pretty clear for me, because I don't think Formiga is going to be able to handle what's coming his way from Figueredo. So much respect for Formiga here, but I do like what I see in Figueredo, and I think he's going to keep his momentum rolling. He's undefeated. He doesn't know what a loss is like, even though he's been in some, you know, some close calls. That Jared Brooks fight in his UFC, in his second fight, I should say, I almost said it to you, but it was the second fight in. That was pretty impressive. I mean, that was a tough, hard-fought battle that he squeaked out there. So you got to give him credit, you know, for that. And he's definitely a guy that can be put on his back at times, and he goes for those guillotine chokes as well. So he has to be smart, like I said, but I think he will be. And I think his momentum is going to continue to go here, and he's going to stand defeated. So the pick is Figueredo to win. I wouldn't be surprised if it's inside the distance, if he stops Formiga on the feet here. So the pick is Figueredo, possibly by inside the distance finish by knockout, or if it hits the scorecards, I think he's good enough to actually steal a 29-28 type of decision, maybe even a 30-27. So the pick is for Figueredo for me.
Yeah, what this fight boils down to is, will Figueredo be able to keep this fight upright? Because, you know, Figueredo does have a strong ground game, but I just don't know if he'll be able to hold his own against somebody with as competent grappling as Formiga. I mean, Formiga on the canvas is right up there at the top of the flyweight division, especially if, you know, he gets people down. I mean, he is immediately advancing to dominant positions, and especially, you know, hopping on their back, backpack style, Damian Maya. So that's a really dangerous situation to be in, even for somebody as talented as Figueredo, who has, you know, strong Brazilian jiu-jitsu skills. So, and then the big concern, obviously, is, you know, Figueredo has been in there against strong wrestlers before, and his takedown defense hasn't held it up amazingly well. You know, against good wrestlers, he got taken down repeatedly. Granted, he was able to, you know, get back to his feet or threaten with submissions and win those fights because, you know, he's still undefeated at 15-0. But if Amiga gets him down, I'm definitely concerned about Figueredo potentially being put in a dominant position. That being said, on the feet, Figueredo is very dangerous. You know, he's got some power. He mixes things up well. His durability is excellent. And while Formiga has improved on the feet, clearly, you know, his strength, pace and accuracy and everything has definitely improved over the past few years. You know, you can't forget that Formiga was, you know, getting blasted in a few fights, getting knocked out by Benavidez. You know, he's been hurt on the feet by a couple guys, and chin strength and durability is definitely a question mark in that department. And I don't think that Formiga can hold his own in a stand-up fight against Figueredo. I see Figueredo winning that fight. So what this fight really boils down to is, will Figueredo's takedown defense be able to hold up against Formiga? Because while Figueredo, you know, definitely had his trouble with defending takedowns against a good, strong American wrestler, you know, Formiga isn't as good wrestling as an American wrestler, but he definitely does have some strong takedown ability, and it's been improving. I mean, you saw that in his win over Sergio Pettis, where, you know, he just kept going to the well, get that fight to the floor, advanced a mount, you know, worked to take the back, and he was able to pull off a pretty impressive upset in that fight that I think Nick and I both predicted. So if Formiga is able to do that again, then Figueredo definitely could be suffering his first loss here. But if Figueredo can get things going on the feet and keep his distance, force Formiga to shoot from the outside, don't let him get too close, then I think Figueredo is going to be in really good shape. I mean, it really boils down to Figueredo keeping this fight upright and doing damage on the feet, because I don't think Formiga can sustain what Figueiredo can dish. And I think if it stays standing, Figueiredo has a really good shot of not just winning, but potentially knocking Formiga out. But if Formiga gets this to the floor, I think he definitely can win a decision as well. So both fighters definitely have a path to victory here, but I think I'm going to side a little bit with this undefeated up-and-coming fighter because I think it would be really interesting to see Figueiredo in there against Henry Cejudo, especially now with the TJ Dillashaw situation. It'd be nice to have the flyweight division continue to be the belt continue to be defended. So I'm going to side with Davis and Figueiredo. Now, moving on to the lightweight division, we have John McDessie, who is 16-6, taking on Jesus Pinedo, who is 16-4-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
McDessie opened minus 215, the comeback of Pinedo plus 165. And right now, over at BetDSI, we're seeing McDessie at minus 310, the comeback plus 240 on Pinedo. So line merge have tightened up, more action coming in McDessie's way. And not surprised, really, especially how this style of matchup really is. I mean, McDessie is by far the more experienced fighter. He is obviously, in my opinion, the better striker of the two, the cleaner technique. He's faced much harder competition throughout his career, really good takedown defense, a sniper on the feet. I mean, he's just hard to deal with. I mean, I think he's at one time, at least he was one of the better strikers in the lightweight division. No doubt about it. Now, I think he has kind of honestly taken a little bit of a step back. That said, he's back on track with a couple of fights in a row in his pocket, win streak over Pearson and Trujillo, which are not easy guys to beat. So I'm not saying he's totally done, but I do think McDessie's better days are kind of behind him a little bit, obviously. And, you know, we're going to start to see him a little bit decline here as his career continues to progress. That doesn't mean he can't get some victories. And this is one of them here against Pinedo. I think, again, he's going to have a significant advantage when it comes to the feet and just overall, experience level, because I think this is a big step up for Pinedo. And, it's a big step down overall for McDessie. That said, be careful because Pinedo does have a lot to offer in this fight. I mean, Pinedo is going to have some length on him. Pinedo does have some okay striking. When he does land, he does have some power behind it as well. He is the better ground fighter of the two. And he does have, like I said, I think he's got that 22-year-old type of fighting mentality that, I mean, he's got nothing to lose. He goes out there and he goes after it. So I think Pinedo is a very tough out for most cases. And I think that he's, again, at age 22, the sky's the limit for him. He's going to continue to improve. I think he's from a very solid camp in Peru. I've had some experience in the past. You know, I met some of his trainers or whatnot, and I've seen them fight personally as well. So, you know, probably an underrated area. And he's getting a lot of individual attention too, which it shows. I mean, it is, again, coming into his own. And I think he is a welcome addition to the UFC. So, you know, I think he's going to win some fights and he's going to continue to improve. But this fight here against McDessie is just biting off a little bit more than he could chew. So the finish possibility is there for Pinedo. But overall, I think he doesn't get it done. There's a possibility McDessie finishes him. And if it hits the scorecards, I'd be surprised if Pinedo gets a win over McDessie. So I understand, again, why the early action came in McDessie's way. I just think Pinedo's just a bit overmatched here. And I think McDessie does get the win.
Pinedo definitely is a talented young fighter on the rise, but like Nick said, there is a huge experience gap here. There's also a big age gap, but experience, I mean, John McDessie's been in there against some of the best fighters in the world, and most recently he's coming off of some quality victories over some very dangerous opponents. You know, Abel Trujillo is a guy with a ton of power, and McDessie got the job done against him, and then most recently beat Ross Pearson. Pinedo, you know, he hasn't faced somebody as good as Pearson or Trujillo in his entire career, and McDessie's been facing those guys consistently throughout his UFC run. And, you know, McDessie has that strong Taekwondo background. You know, he's a very competent striker, and if this fight stays standing, I mean, I just cannot see Pinedo keeping up with McDessie. The only issue I have with McDessie is sometimes, you know, he sits back a little bit and doesn't dictate the fight. But, you know, I just don't see Pinedo being the guy that I mean, unless he lands something crazy, I don't see him outworking or getting the better of McDessi in a stand-up fight. Pinedo probably needs to get this fight to the floor, and McDessi actually has really worked on improving his takedown defense. You know, he's not the easiest guy to put on his back. You know, he holds an 87% takedown defense over a pretty long UFC career. So, you know, I have a lot of faith in John McDessie's ability to keep this fight upright. And if Pinedo is forced to stand, just don't see him getting the better of, you know, a savvy veteran with a ton of striking experience. So, you know, I completely understand why, you know, people are believing in McDessie here. So even though McDessie is, you know, clearly a lot older than Pinedo, who is, you know, 22, I believe, I just feel like, that experience is important, and McDessie definitely still has some gas left in the tank, as evident, as made evident by his most recent two performances. So, I think McDessie brings the fight to Pinedo, and I'm just not quite convinced that Pinedo's ready for a fighter of McDessie's caliber. So I think McDessie potentially wins by knockout, but at least outpoints Pinedo over the course of three rounds and wins a decision. Now, moving all the way up to the heavyweight division, we have Curtis Blaydes, who is 10-2 with one no contest, taking on Justin Willis, who is 8-1. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Blaydes open minus 245, the comeback plus 175 on Willis. Right now, over at BetDSI, we are seeing minus 260 for Blaydes, plus 210 for Willis. So line margins have tightened up a little bit, and there is two action on this fight as well. That said, this is an intriguing fight. I'll tell you what, both these guys have honestly looked pretty good overall. And I know that Blaydes is coming off a very disappointing loss again to the hands of Ngannou. Ngannou got him twice now. I mean, the stoppage in the first fight, and then obviously he blasted him in the second one here recently, and just, you know, like I said, disappointing knockout loss for Blaydes. But he's a special type of fighter, obviously. The guy has a tremendous amount of punching power. That's kind of rare, obviously, in the heavyweight division. But he's facing another heavy hitter here in Willis. Not the freakish Ngannou type of pop. Willis does have some speed. He does have some power on the feet as well. And coming off of a knockout loss like he did, you know, mentally, I mean, that does definitely have to play an impact on you. And Willis's wrestling background is going to come into play here as well. So this, like I said again at the beginning, this is an intriguing fight. And it's a tough one on me at the betting window as well, because I think where the line is now, it's hard to bet Blaydes here, even though Blaydes, in my opinion, obviously he should have the wrestling advantage over Willis. He's going to have some size, advantage over Willis, obviously, as well. And Blaydes is probably a little bit underrated, but he is a tad slow at times and he's hittable. We've seen that in the past. And again, his chin is probably unfair to say that he's got kind of a suspect chin, because outside of the, you know, like I said, that last loss to Ngannou in the first fight, I mean, he's been rocked, but his chin has held up pretty decent. But I think with the speed and power combination that Willis does have, and I think Willis knows that Blaydes is obviously going to try to take him down here, and his path to victory is obviously trying to land some big punches on the feet as well. It's a dangerous fight for Blaydes, and Willis, it definitely has upside. I think a lot of people were surprised somewhat the way Willis was able to outstrike Mark Hunt as he did. That was an impressive win. Hunt is not an easy fighter to get in there with and strike like he, you know, outstrike him like Willis was able to do there without getting blasted in his own right. So again, with the wrestling background, with the ability that Willis has shown on the feet as well, this is an intriguing fight. And I'm kind of going back and forth on it. With that said, that means there's definitely some value, I think, on the underdog here, Willis, as far as what he brings to the table. Now, maybe take a flyer on Willis inside the distance, or a prop Willis by knockout or something like that along the way, because I don't see Willis edging Blaydes out on the scorecards here. I think Blaydes is going to be able to probably control the fight, at least, you know, bully Willis around, push him up against the cage, slow this down, close the distance a little bit so he doesn't have to stay in space with Willis if he can't get him to the ground as well. I mean, that's the factor here. Can Blaydes kind of utilize what he does best and get this fight to the ground, or just make it an ugly, boring type of fight and just kind of control him, grind it out? I think there is a chance he does do that with his size and his skill set, and he's going to play it a little bit safer now coming off that knockout loss as well. So I'm slightly leaning Blaydes' way, but I'm not confidently picking him to win this fight. So like I said, I think it's a dog or pass situation, but I still think I need to see a little bit more from Willis before I put him over Blaydes right now. So in my opinion, Blaydes is going to probably get the W here, but again, not confident. And if you're betting Blaydes, I would definitely approach this with caution. Like I said, I think it's a dog or pass situation, or personally, I would look for maybe a prop or two with Willis inside the distance or so. So the pick is Blaydes. Let's see how this one plays out. I'm very interested to see.
Yeah. As Nick mentioned, you know, Blaydes has had his issues against Ngannou. That's really the only guy that's been able to stop him, but that is a concern. And he is coming off of a really, really rough performance where Ngannou just obliterated him. Really. So that's a concern. That really is. And as Nick mentioned, you know, Blaydes has been rocked before. Mark Hunt was able to hurt him pretty badly early in that fight, but wasn't able to take him out. And then Blaydes turned the tables, got the takedown, and was able to win the fight. So, you know, this fight's going to really boil down to how good of a use of distance is Justin Willis going to have here, because Willis showed incredible use of a jab in that last fight, because, I mean, he took on a really strong kickboxer in Mark Hunt, and he outstruck him over the course of three rounds, primarily with the use of a superior jab. Really flustered Hunt, used great footwork, and that's really what it takes if you're going to stop a strong wrestler, like force them to shoot from way out where it's a lot easier to stuff the takedown. And, you know, Willis is a strong athlete. He has pretty takedown defense. I mean, he has a little bit of athletic wrestling background. And I feel like if Willis can utilize distance properly, establish a jab, he can keep Curtis Blaydes on the outside. I mean, if Blaydes is able to immediately close the distance, that's a completely different story. But if Willis is able to stick on that outside and just pop that jab and flash that jab in Blaydes' face, I think Blaydes is going to get really flustered, because the stand-up is really not Blaydes' bread and butter. You know, this guy's all about using that wrestling, getting the takedowns, and then beating people up on the ground. I mean, we saw it against Olenek. We saw it against Hunt. We saw it against Overeem. Those are all real quality victories for Blaydes. Every one of those guys was a top 10 UFC heavyweight at the time, and Blaydes either finished them or earned a one-sided decision with his wrestling. So with Willis, you know, this is a guy that, you know, I still remember watching his UFC debut through the Fight Factory TV series, and, you know, or his MMA professional debut. And he actually, you know, had a little bit of an issue with, you know, conditioning, with getting taken down, but, you know, he bounced back. That was 2012. So, and then he worked his way back. You know, he trained at AKA with, you know, Daniel Cormier and Cain Velasquez, and he hasn't lost since. And, for him to come back and, now has gone 4-0 in the UFC with, you know, a knockout over Alan Crowder, and most recently that incredible performance against Hunt that really put him on the map. I feel like, you know, there's definitely something there with Willis. You know, this is a kid with a lot of talent. He is head and shoulders ahead of Blaydes in the striking department. So if he's able to keep this fight upright, I think that he's going to, easily win a decision, if not knock Blaydes out. It's just all going to boil down to, can he establish a jab and keep his distance? And, you know, I think he can, especially with Blaydes coming off of that brutal 45-second loss. You know, what's his confidence going to be like? Is he going to be able to close the distance and shoot in without fear of, you know, getting caught on the way in like he did against Ngannou? You know, is he going to be able to respond if he gets hurt, by Willis? You know, there's a lot of going into this fight, and I feel like, Justin Willis has the momentum, and if he can establish that jab, I think he can really fluster Curtis Blaydes and, you know, kind of expose Blaydes a little bit because, you know, he is a bit, you know, if he doesn't get the wrestling going, then he's a bit of a fish out of the water on the feet. And, I think Justin Willis could really, make Blaydes look bad if he can stuff some takedowns. So I'm going to side with Justin Willis. I'm going to pick with the underdog here. I think that he can get the job done, and maybe Blaydes might need to go back to work a little bit to, improve that stand up to help set up takedowns, but we'll see. You know, it wasn't that long ago I was picking Blaydes to avenge that first loss to Ganu. So, you know, a lot can change in one fight, and that's what happened here. But I think that Justin Willis gets the job done in this co-main event. Now, moving on to the main event of the evening in the welterweight division, we have Steven Wonderboy Thompson, who is 14-3-1, taking on Anthony Showtime Pettis, who is 21-8. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Thompson open minus 285, the comeback on Pettis at plus 205. Right now, what you're seeing over at DSI is minus 370 for Thompson. The comeback on Pettis is at plus 270. So line margins have tightened up. More action coming in Thompson's way. I mean, first things first, Pettis is moving up to 170 pounds. Everybody's going to point out the fact that he was down at featherweight before at 145 pounds. He fought most of his career lightweight, 155 pounds, so he's moving up to 170. Interesting. I mean, I think it's honestly just he's trying to find a better fit for himself. So moving up to 170, he's going to have to cut less weight. He's going to be a little bit healthier. His chin's – everything's going to be a little bit better for him. I think his chin's going to hold up better and whatnot. I mean, obviously against the power strikers, and if you're a bit undersized at 170 pounds or guys with a ton of power, you got to be careful. But even though Thompson is definitely a sniper and has knockout power, he's not going to be the one-punch knockout type guy in most cases overall. So in that regard, I think Thompson is definitely capable of knocking Pettis out. I'm not saying that, but I think more so it would be probably with maybe catching him with a kick or a flurry or, you know, a combination or something like that. So I don't think the power is going to be that big of a difference in this fight, but overall the size is going to matter. I mean, Thompson's going to have some length on him as well. And skill for skill, these guys are both tremendous strikers, two of the best strikers on the UFC roster ever. So this should be an intriguing matchup. I mean, I know people are going to say that Pettis is maybe a little bit past it right now, of course. I mean, he hasn't been, you know, as he was in his prime, what we were used to seeing from Pettis, of course. But that said, you know, Thompson, I think, you know, he's not getting any younger either. So I think this is kind of an intriguing matchup back and forth here. Both these guys like to stand. I know Pettis has a more complete game overall, meaning that he's capable of submitting Thompson if this fight hits the floor. But can he get it there? Thompson has pretty good takedown defense overall, and he's shown that at times as well. So I think it's going to probably end up being a stand-up affair. We're going to see some movement. We're going to see some excellent counters and combinations back and forth. And I think ultimately Thompson is going to be the one that I trust a little bit more because I think his conditioning at this point is definitely better than Pettis's. I think overall he's a little bit more defensively sound at this point as well. And I think obviously he does have the advantage on the feet overall too. So it's hard not to pick Thompson. I mean, there's not a very clear path to victory for Pettis unless he lands that one big blow that, you know, that clips Thompson and puts him out. Because let's face it, Thompson does have a little bit of kryptonite, and it is his chin. I mean, the people that have been able to get through, Woodley was able to drop him a couple times. He's been rocked in other fights as well. So, I mean, he's tough, but he can be dropped at times, and Pettis does have some knockout power, again, in his hands or his feet. So it's possible maybe that he does land something like that. I think that's probably the path to victory. Outside of that, though, this is a five-round fight. As it progresses, I expect Thompson to probably end up finishing this fight if he does put his foot on the gas a little bit, if he does end up hurting Pettis along the way. So I don't expect it to go this, but, you know, if we see a five-round fight, as long as it's fun, I wouldn't be disappointed, I guess, in that regard as well. So I think Thompson likely finishes Pettis inside the distance, but I'm hoping it's a better fight than we all anticipate. So hard to bet this fight, though. If you're going to, you know, find a prop line that says maybe Thompson inside the distance or something like that, that's probably the way I would go as far as betting goes. Outside of that, just sit back, watch it as a fan, and hopefully it's a good show. So the pick is Thompson for me over Pettis.
Yeah, I'm really concerned about this move for Pettis because, you know, this is a guy that fought for the featherweight title, you know, not that long ago. And now he's moving up two weight classes from that. You know, I know he's the former lightweight champ, so it's not that far removed. You know, moving up one weight class from where he was a champ, but, you know, Anthony Pettis, you know, still seems to be, you know, suffering a little bit from that beating he took from Rafael Dos Anjos back in 2015. I mean, since that loss, you know, he's, you know, he's had six losses in his last nine fights, and he's taken some serious punishment in some of those fights. You know, the Dos Anjos beating was pretty brutal. The Edson Barboza fight, you know, he really got lit up there. When he lost to Max Holloway, I mean, Holloway just teed off on him in that third round. Dustin Poirier really laid into him. And then most recently, you know, TKO corner stoppage against Tony Ferguson in a fight where, you know, he had his moments. And that's what, you know, Anthony Pettis is, you know, he's an exciting fighter with, some really flashy skills and techniques. He's a tremendous athlete, but, he also has some trouble sustaining a strong pace. His conditioning has been a bit suspect. His striking defense is not nearly as good as it used to be. So I'm definitely concerned here because, you know, he is, while he's moving up a weight class, I mean, he is fighting a guy that is a legitimate, welterweight size. I mean, Pettis has given up, you know, some reach. He's given up height. You know, Stephen Thompson, you know, and leg reach is actually going to be a factor here because both of these guys like to throw kicks. And, Stephen Thompson having, the longer leg reach, you know, that could help him with leg kicks. It could help him with head kicks. It could help him with a lot of, different array of kicks that, you know, these guys are both throwing kicks at the same time. You know, Thompson has the better chance of landing the more impactful kick. So, you know, with Thompson's, you know, karate style, I think, Pettis could have some trouble, finding those moments to connect. Now the other thing that Pettis has had historically is, you know, he's had some trouble against really strong, competent, technical strikers. And Stephen Thompson is definitely one of those. You know, this is a guy that can just work from that outside and just really fluster people. I mean, who could forget what he did against Rory McDonald just with some beautiful counter striking and jabs. And, you know, McDonald just could not find an opening. And, you know, and when Tyron Woodley wasn't landing a big takedown or a knockdown, you know, it was Thompson that was flustering him on the feet just with, great movement and, taking advantage of small openings. So, I think, over the course of five rounds, Stephen Thompson should definitely be getting the better of Anthony Pettis. But Pettis could potentially land, you know, that big shot. You know, he's had his moments. I mean, he almost took out Tony Ferguson. He almost, you know, took out a lot of people in, this current rough stretch that he's had in his, career. And, as Nick mentioned, you know, Thompson has a little bit of kryptonite with the chin. You know, he got dropped by Till at the fifth round of that fight he lost, lost with quotation marks there. He got dropped by Woodley. He's been dropped by Jake Ellenberger. So, while he hasn't been knocked out, that's definitely a concern. And Anthony Pettis has the ground game to potentially take advantage if Thompson, does get hurt. So, I mean, I could see Pettis jumping on something and potentially submitting Thompson if he hurts him. So that's definitely something to keep an eye on. But, you know, as good as Anthony Pettis's ground game is, I don't see any other way that he'll be able to utilize it. I don't think he can be shooting in for takedowns against Thompson. I don't think he'll be able to put Thompson on his back. So the only way that, you know, that the submission skills are going to be used is if he hurts Thompson first. So that's Pettis' path to victory. I think he needs a finish here. I don't see him winning a decision. I just think Thompson can kind of do the death by a thousand cuts where he just slowly and methodically picks them apart. I think it could be very similar to what Edson Barboza did when he fought Pettis. You know, just really puts on a striking clinic and kind of exposes some of the flaws in Pettis' game where he's just a little bit too reliant on flash and athleticism. And I think, Thompson really wears him down over the course of five rounds. And I see Thompson getting the win, either a late TKO or potentially just wins all five rounds. So my pick's going to be Stephen Thompson. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC on ESPN Plus 6. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMA OB Premium on Twitter, because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAoddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to BetDSI. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.